Hey everybody, how are you guys doing? I'm Colleen Fabry and this is Venture Europe. Venture Europe is a series of conversations with successful entrepreneurs, investors, and ecosystem contributors where we discuss about the strategies, tactics, frameworks, and failings that they have used and experienced during their journey. It is my personal vendetta to contribute in making Europe one of the most attractive entrepreneurial ecosystems in the world. Big words, hard work, so let's get started. My guest today is Julien Codorniu, partner and investor at Felix Capital, the 600 million euro fund investing in brands and related enabling technologies. At Felix, he focuses on SaaS, work tech in particular, and gaming investments. Before joining Felix, Julien spent 11 years at Facebook, where he led the global platform partnerships team, helping Facebook partners build, grow, and monetize their mobile apps and games. Also, he has been serving as vice president of Facebook Workplace. Under his leadership, Workplace went from 0 to 10 million paid subscribers at companies like Walmart, Nestle, McDonald's, Chevron, AstraZeneca, Spotify, and many others. His angel portfolio includes fantastic companies like Triple Dot Studios, Be Real, Linktree, Bloom & Wild, Pikmin, Central, and Bits, among others. He grew up in France and he loves croissants and now lives in London with his wife and their two boys. During this episode, we discuss about the crazy growth journey that he experienced with Facebook from 500 million users to the IPO, how the best investments he made took only 2 seconds to decide, and why sometimes you should go slow and don't break things. Please enjoy my conversation with Julien Codorniu. Let's travel a bit back in time to 2011. So you are with Microsoft and decide to join Facebook. Paint us a picture of where Facebook was then and why you decided to join them.
It's a long story, but from 2008 to 2010, I was working at Microsoft at the headquarters in Seattle in the developers division. A few friends of mine all left at the same time to join Facebook, to build and to start the developers division. I have to say, I did not see the potential of Facebook as a development platform when I was there, but I realized that all the good people I knew, all the people I really wanted to work with or work for were living there. You know, I got interested in talking to them and in potentially joining. I came back to Europe. There was an opportunity to join a team to help and build the platform, basically ping the people I knew there and went through the interview process locally in Europe to join the team. But I really went there because I was following people I trusted and that I respected. And then it's once I joined Facebook that I realized the massive potential of Facebook as a platform back then. Mostly a gaming platform back in the days. It became obvious quite quickly.
And do you remember the conversation with your boss when you told him, hey, I'm leaving for Facebook? I would assume that they're competitors.
Yeah, and it was hard because I was the happiest Microsoft employee. My dream company when I was young was Microsoft. Took me a lot of time to get in. I really wanted to work in the US at the HQ as well to experience, you know, Microsoft from the inside in Redmond. So I was extremely happy. I had excellent managers. I loved my team. I loved my job. But I think I was looking for something, I'm going to say a bit more entrepreneurial, because back then Facebook, you know, kind of already made it. There was no risk in joining Facebook. But I wanted to join a rocket ship. Something that would accelerate, something that would go public, something where we could experience, where I could experience hyper growth and scaling significantly a business like that. So they understood it. It was tough because I owed a lot to these people and I owed a lot to Microsoft and all the managers I had there. But they understood that I needed something different and that Facebook and the stage at which Facebook was back then was very different from Microsoft's stage at that time. It was hard because I had been well taken care of and I had great managers there. I learned so much at Microsoft. It was ridiculous.
Looking back, was the journey with Facebook, now Meta, what you envisioned, or it was more or less?
It was 100 times crazier than everything I imagined. I joined, I think we had less than 1,000 employees. I think Facebook passed 500 million users. So it was already a very popular service and a growing business, but the business model itself wasn't finalized. But back then, Facebook was all about likes and pages. After the IPO, there was a shift to mobile, the shift to in-feed ads as well, and then other, you know, ad tech business models. But it was the journey of a lifetime. The growth we went through, the learnings as well of growing that fast, going public, having a complicated IPO, recovering from that, scaling and having a love story with the market every 3 months, then, you know, some challenges with some tougher moments. Great learning experiences, being part of that and having the responsibility to grow first the gaming business and then the developers platform and then workplace was you know, the opportunity of a lifetime, and I learned so much. But I could not have imagined that it would be that crazy and that it would go that fast.
And what do people often get wrong about Facebook or Meta now?
I think there's always a 2 years lag between what people think Facebook is doing and what Facebook is actually doing. You know, just let's take the IPO, for example. When Facebook went public, people were shorting Facebook because they thought that Facebook did not see mobile coming, that they had no mobile plans, and that the CEO was too young and that he did not care about what the market was about back then, which was mobile. Internally, at Facebook, it was a very different story. You had people who had been working on mobile for a very long time, and maybe in the last 18 months before the IPO, you could not talk about anything that was not mobile. So the company was obsessed with making mobile work. They had the plan, they had the right people in place, but externally, people were asking if Facebook actually understood mobile. And I have seen that discrepancy many, many times at Facebook. I think it's because of maybe a lack of communication or a lack of transparency that I think is being fixed. But it was always shocking to me that Facebook is very well aware of both the challenges and the opportunities that they have to fix or to go and grab, but that the perception of the public market sometimes is very different, and it takes time to catch up.
And what do you think they do exceptionally well? You just mentioned that it was like a crazy journey, 100 times more crazy than you would have imagined. What do you think they do exceptionally well?
I think it's the scaling of new businesses or features from a small set of users, from a small group and a small cohort of A/B testers to basically 3 billion people. It's a remarkable scaling engine, scaling machine that I have not seen very often on the market. When they notice that something works or that something is working or about to work, they can scale it extremely fast. And they can also kill it extremely fast if they see it doesn't work. So that ability to A/B test and to understand the early signals, or to turn it into a best practice or into a Facebook family of apps wide feature is remarkable, especially at that scale.
You mentioned that there is this difference of 2 years. What do you think they are seeing now with the metaverse and also changing the name to Meta?
Well, I think that that change has been quite public when it happened in Q3, maybe Q4 actually, last year. But it's one of the rare examples where what Facebook is actually working on is something that is known and understood by the public. Will it work? I don't know. I hope it's going to work. I know Facebook is betting the farm, but I think that move, that pivot has been better managed. Some of the things that Facebook spent a lot of time and energy on that I would say the public did not understand, like, for example, the integrity effort, which was something Facebook took extremely seriously after Cambridge Analytica and other dramas like that. But I don't think they got enough credit externally for the efforts and for understanding the complexity of the problem. So I think they're probably getting better there. But it's an opportunity for greatness, as we say.
And just to change gears a little bit and to focus on investment now, when did you get interested in investment?
I always got interested into investment. You know, 20 years ago, I was reading books like, you know, E-Boys about the team at Benchmark or High Stakes, No Prisoners. So I was always interested, but I knew I had to start my career as an operator to eventually one day go back or go into the investing world. But as soon as I could, thanks to Facebook, invest in companies, I sold Facebook shares to invest in private tech companies. I really wanted to do it, not because I needed that financially. It would have been sometimes a much better call to keep my Facebook shares, but because I just wanted the thrill and the adrenaline of being part of somebody else's journey. And that was the kick I was looking for when I started investing. I was meeting a lot of great entrepreneurs, and I just wanted to be part of it and to watch and observe how they operate and to learn from them. Especially, you know, for my Facebook day-to-day job, you learn a lot from entrepreneurs and builders. So I wanted to be exposed and to feel part of something more entrepreneurial on the side.
So you joined Felix Capital 10, 11 months ago. Do you remember like the first meeting with the team? Why did you decide to join them?
I was an active angel. I've done more than 50 deals as an angel. I had the opportunity to work with, you know, some of the best investors in Europe, like Sonali at Axel or Luciana at Sequoia, Ophelia at Blossom, Martin at Index, and many more. So I was exposed to that community, that ecosystem. But I knew Frederic, the founder of Felix. You know, we met 15 years ago when I was at Microsoft. when I came to London, when I was at Facebook, he pitched Felix to me. He was looking for advisors and LPs, and I told him that I would love to invest and I would love to be an advisor. So I'm new to the Felix team per se, because I joined in December, but I'm not new to the Felix family because I was an advisor and an investor in every fund since day one. When I decided that I wanted to move to the investment world after having talked to people in the industry and discussing with Fred and with Suzanne and Antoine and the rest of the team at Felix, I decided that it was an easy way for me to get in because I knew them, I knew the numbers, they knew me as well inside out. I was coming from the world of big tech and operations. They were more on the VC side of the house. It was a good match. But it was, I could say it took 15 years because that's when I met Fred, but it actually took a few years. And I knew the team and how they operated very, very well, even before joining them full time, which helps a lot, especially, you know, having that trust and that respect in a small team like that is super important. I think it's the main risk when you hire a partner as a VC fund. And that trust and that respect, mutual, I believe, was there very early on.
How is it different investing actually from an institutional fund than investing as an angel?
It's very different. You know, as an angel, my best deals are deals I've done in 2 seconds because I absolutely wanted to invest in these people. For example, Triple Dot in gaming was one of my best investments because I knew the team. Akin used to work for me when I was at Facebook. And so I knew that whatever he would do, it would be something big. And so I just wanted to be part of it. I invested in Pigment in France, you know, because I really wanted to see how Eleonore and Romain would operate. I invested in Blumen Wild or in Be Real as well because of, you know, something I saw that got me excited, but it took me 2 seconds to make the decision. As a VC, it's of course very different because it's not your money. You're investing other people's money. So you have to document. You have to spend time on the team, on the market, on the size of the market, on every potential risk that could be there and also every opportunity that you see for the company. So it's a much longer, thoughtful process that needs to be documented so that when you look at it in 10 years or 15 years, you understand why you made that decision or why you passed on the company as well. So it's very different from the drive-by investing lifestyle of an angel, which also is great for me because this is a new job and I'm learning it from people that are very good at it at the Felix team. So I'm glad that at my advanced age, I can learn something new and be like the rookie in the team and in the industry. It's very refreshing.
It's always good to start to learn different things and feel like a rookie. It's much more exciting. I'm curious because you mentioned that the best deals are made in 2 seconds, and it's mostly driven by the assessment of the team, which I guess still applies at Felix, but then you add all the new information and new analysis about the market and try to manage risk. If we'll have to focus maybe on the analysis of the team, can you pinpoint like what exactly convinced you to bet on the team on 2 seconds?
What really helped me as an angel is that my first two deals were quick disasters. The first two companies I invested in, and trust me, when I invested in, I thought, you know, that would these two companies would be the next big things. But I lost everything in 6 months. Quick, massive, you know, failures. And I realized that I did not know these guys before investing. I got bullshitted by the pitch. I got it wrong. I did not check. And so I had to set up a code for myself. And I decided to only invest as an angel in people that I knew, that I've seen at work for a long time. Akin is a good example at Triple Dot. Same thing for Romain at Pigment or Aaron at Blumen Wild. Invested in products that I use or love to use. You know, Deliveroo was a good example. Again, Blumen Wild, great example. Linktree, great example as well. Or I invest when deals are recommended to me by people I really trust, you know, like the mentors I had in the industry, even before joining the industry myself, people at Felix, of course, but also Axel, Sequoia, Index, Blossom, Moonfire. So that was my code. Being now full-time and becoming an institutional investor, I need to keep that. And I need to keep, I would say, the connections and the history I have with some founders. But I also have to be open to surprises and to invest in people I don't know. So you reduce that risk of investing in people you've never heard of or never seen at work by doing all of the extra work, you know, on the due diligence, looking at the product, talking to as many customers as possible, interviewing the team and all of that. I would love to be able to keep both because I believe that there's something interesting. Or there was, when I look at my portfolio, my best deals came from that by just investing in A players that you've seen at work, that you trust and respect and just want to back. And at the same time, having the more scientific approach to venture investing. I really want to try and keep both. But because I'm investing other people's money, I have to be able to document that and to explain why we make these decisions.
And how do you assess a team if it's an A-player team, if you have never met them before or see them work?
Well, there's a lot of pattern recognition. I can absolutely say that I was a B-player at Facebook, but I was surrounded by A-players. I've seen and observed and studied, I would even say, fantastic operators and entrepreneurs at Facebook, you know, starting with the CEO, Sheryl Sandberg, you know, people like Fidji Seymour or Alex Schulz, Deb Liu, who created a few billion dollars product at Facebook. So I can tell an A player when I see one because I was exposed to a lot of A players when I was there and also at Microsoft and, you know, with my angel activity. So there's some pattern recognition, but then, you know, a few spending time with people, you know, you look at who they hire, you look at their values, their principles, how they drive their business, that also helps. Historically, in the software industry, a lot of college dropouts have created empires, with Microsoft is a good example, Facebook as well, recently Figma as well. So you need to keep the door open for amazing surprises, because you never know, you know, where the next big thing or the next big founder will come from. And maybe she will come from big tech, or she will have created an amazing company before, or maybe she would just be a college dropout and you want to find her and back her, even if it's the first time entrepreneur.
I don't remember Andre from Excel, he was telling me that he's looking for a sort of obsessiveness and intensity. I kind of like that, you know, to see that someone is very obsessed and intense about a problem to solve it. And tell me a little bit more about Felix Capital. Like, what are you guys looking for? What type of companies do you guys invest? And maybe you can tell me a little bit more about your last investment.
We have $1.2 billion under management. We just raised $600 million just a few months ago, half for venture deals and half for growth deals. Historically, Felix was a very consumer-friendly fund. I would say the flagship deal for Felix and for Fred in particular is Farfetch. We've also backed companies like Goop, like YFood, High Snobiety, Oatly, VanMoof. So there's a lot of consumer deals there. But slowly, Felix extended that to technologies helping brands and communities to be successful. That's why they invested in Miracle, for example. They expanded to SaaS, B2E, I would say, companies like Unmind and Pepe in the women health area, to some crypto as well. Let's say we look at the evolution of the journey of the consumer and we try to find deals that make sense. And that could be, you know, the consumer at home, but also at work. And I specifically joined Felix to invest in gaming, which is new for Felix, and I've just done a deal in gaming in Turkey in that space, and also SaaS and future of work in particular. But we want, when we do SaaS investments, we want to invest in SaaS companies and SaaS products that as many employees as possible really use it and really love using it. We would not do cybersecurity or dev tools, which are SaaS tools that only a few people in the company use. But things like Unmind, Pepe, Ubiq are very good examples of where we think, you know, coming from the world of consumer and having that obsession for user adoption and user retention, I think can help. And my last deal, Colin, which, you know, it's one of the two deals I've done so far, is a company called Predico, company across London and Paris. It's an inventory management software solution. It's a seed deal, a $5 million round that we led. And the company is helping omni-channel brands, you know, people selling on Shopify, but also selling offline, to plan, order, and finance their inventory more accurately. Most brands and most Shopify merchants use Excel to do that. It's kind of a mess. The legacy tools are not great as well. You never want to have too much inventory. You never want to have, you know, not enough inventory to sell when you know you have a good thing going on. So using AI and software, looking at the past, looking at what you have today, how the business is evolving, looking at what you are going to ship, but also how much you want to invest in marketing, all of that can help, you know, software to augment and to empower, you know, e-commerce entrepreneurs to forecast, but also to order and finance more accurately. So it's a team that we fell in love with, a sector that I really appreciate as well. So we'll see, but it's a very exciting company and an extraordinary team. Talking about A players, 30 minutes with the founder, I told myself, look, we have to back this guy. You know, whatever happens, he will find a way. He will make it work. I had no doubt that it was a company we should be backing. And I'm glad we ended up winning the competition to back them and to have the pleasure to work with them every day.
So do you remember the first meeting with them? And how did you build that confidence in 30 minutes? Like, what exactly helped you to build that confidence and say, we have to back them?
It's a company that the Felix team had tracked for a while. And so they invited the CEO to come to the investment meeting. So there was a lot of work and history. Before that, there were also a few angels that we trust on the cap table. You know, people like Guillaume, the CEO of Checkout. I think the CEO of Klarna was also on the cap table. The CEO of ProcessOut, which is a company Checkout acquired, was there. So we had a lot of friends that we respected on the cap table. So the team tracked the company, you know, for the last few months. When the CEO started looking for a formal seed round, you know, he was invited to come and pitch. That's how I met Yuri. I love the pitch. I love, you know, how thoughtful he was about the business, how well he knew the business. He was a consultant in inventory management for companies like Tesco or DFS for many years. So he's actually productizing something that he's been selling and providing to the market for many years. And you could see that. You could see a passion for the mission and a deep understanding of the both the problems, but also the opportunities that omnichannel brands had. But I remember vividly because I told the team, look, if we don't back someone like that in that sector, which is a very felix sector, it means we're not doing our job. Then we had to do the homework and, of course, win the deal, which took some time. I remember vividly when I met Yuri. I was also, you know, held by partners. The first deal, you cannot lead. You have to be the sidekick and you have to learn from the best. So Antoine and Joseph helped me a lot to go through that process.
In closing, let's get a bit personal. This is actually my favorite part. What was the most challenging period in your career and how did you overcome it?
It was when we decided officially to start Workplace as a business at Facebook. When I left Microsoft, I told myself I will never go back to B2B. Never. Too slow, too boring. B2C, so much fun. You can scale to billions of people. And, you know, 6 years after I joined Facebook, I was basically asked to go and create a B2B business, a SaaS business, you know, selling to the biggest, the most complicated buyers on the planet. And so when you walk into the office of the CIO of Walmart or the CIO of AstraZeneca with a Facebook badge, you know, on your t-shirt, you need to have a lot of trust and passion in the mission. It was hard. It was challenging, but we actually loved it. We love to be the underdog of the SaaS industry. We love to be able to close these deals, you know, like Walmart that we signed, AstraZeneca, McDonald's, which was a 2 million people SaaS deployment and a SaaS deal. So it was hard because there was no one at Facebook we could go to and say, hey, teach me how to build the SaaS business. Teach me how to go to market with a direct sales approach with top-down wall-to-wall deals. Because it was hard and because we were the underdog, we kind of loved it. And every deal was an opportunity to prove the market that they were wrong, to maybe to not take it seriously. But it was definitely harder than, you know, building the gaming team at Facebook when we had the most amazing distribution and monetization platform for gaming companies. You know, people were just coming your way inbound to work with you. Workplace was very different.
What is the best and worst advice you have received?
It's linked, but, you know, before joining Facebook, I was always told that as an operator, you have to be good at everything. Like you have to be good at partnerships. And if you can be good at marketing as well, it's great. And if you can also be good at accounting on the side, it really helps. I joined Facebook and basically Facebook tells you, well, just do the thing you're the best at. First, because you will enjoy it way more. And two, because we don't want you to do something where you're like half good and half interested. So that philosophy of, you know, pushing people to only work on the things they are the best at, I think, you know, reveals the best in operators and in employees. It was a misconception I had for many years that I had to try and be good at everything or to be average at everything. When you join Facebook, people tell you, well, if you're good at something, if you're the best at something, just do that. We don't want you to be disrupted by the things you're not good at. Nobody wants that, especially, you know, the employee. But you really changed the way I was thinking about talent management.
Have you taken that now to Felix? Are you telling your colleagues, look, if you're extremely good at something, just focus on that?
It's a bit different, but I know that my skill set at Felix is that I'm a former operator. And so this is also why, you know, Felix wanted to hire me, is that if you need someone to review a term sheet, I'm probably not the best person in the team because I'm still learning how to do that and how to spot anomalies and opportunities, you know, in a 50-page term sheet. But as an operator, I love spending time at the boards. I love spending time with sales team, with entrepreneurs, with founders, especially in SaaS and gaming, because this is where I come from. So, and this is the beauty of the partnership we have at Felix, is that if a SaaS entrepreneur wants to talk go-to-market, I'll be the first one to rush in, and I will be actually extremely happy to do that as often as possible. So everybody brings a different skill set. Fred is the chief investment officer. He thinks portfolio construction, LP management, and all of that. I know nothing about that. Making sure that we all optimize for everybody's strengths, I think, is a very good thing.
What are some trends that get you excited nowadays?
I think the consumerization of IT, which is not a new trend, but it's been there forever. And people have been talking about that for a while. You know, Slack is a great example of that, or Figma as well is a good example of that. But more generally, SaaS products becoming as good as mobile-friendly, as consumer-friendly than consumer products is interesting. And personally, I'm obsessed with SaaS or IT for the 99%, which is something I experienced and that I witnessed, you know, firsthand when I was at workplace. But you look at the frontline market, which is a market of 2 billion people who go to work every day, who never had an email, never had a PC, never had a desk. This is a cohort of employees that has not yet been revolutionized or been augmented or empowered by software, like you and I have in the last few years. And I think serving these employees, that category of employees, which everybody calls now, you know, critical workers, giving them tools to feel connected, to feel informed, to feel augmented, you know, with bots and AI and all of that, I think it's a market I have a lot of passion for my workplace days. And you know, we have an investment in that space with Felix in a company called Ubiq. There will be a lot of startups going after that category of employee and helping them to get the job done, but also to be upskilled faster, to learn new things, to be promoted faster, and to grow through the rank faster. And that, I think, is something I'm super passionate about.
Solving for the rest of 99%.
HR tech and work tech in general is interesting, but that cohort of employees is super interesting, to me at least. And it's aligned with the Felix thesis as well, of democratizing IT and not just thinking about the 1% who want to pay $60 per month for their SaaS app. There's something else behind that.
Inclusion and access.
Absolutely.
In closing, if Julien from 10 years ago would listen to this episode, what would you tell him?
I would tell him that he doesn't need to move that fast and he doesn't need to break everything all the time. It was one of the principles at Facebook back then, move fast and break things, which I loved. I felt I was made for that. But I think I pushed it sometimes a bit to the extreme level, and that, you know, it's okay to slow down and not to break everything all the time.
Thank you very much for taking the time, Julien. It was such a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Colin. Thanks for the opportunity to come on the podcast.